This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Jeremy Crittenden is here on That's a Gay Ass Podcast with a splint on your fingy. Jeremy, tell me, are you okay? Was it fitness or fisting or otherwise?
You know, I really want to say that I broke it inside a twonk, but unfortunately, it was a football accident, which is arguably a hot way to get injured.
Wait, you were playing literal football when you hurt your finger?
Literal football. Yeah, there's a gay football league in New York. Actually, there's a gay football league like in many cities across America.
Yeah.
But I'm in the one in New York City. 200 gay guys playing flag football. It's the most fun I've ever had. I've really been enjoying it, and I'm devastated that I can't be playing right now because we're in the playoffs and my team's doing great. Every time I'm not there, my team wins. So I'm probably a curse, but I was having a great time while it lasted.
Well, obviously the sports of it all is great to have gays sort of reclaim the sports arena, but I want to know about the social atmosphere of the gay football. Is it giving everyone sisters? Is there drama with hookups? Are people dating? What's happening behind the scenes of flag football after dark?
It's exactly what you want it to be. Like, yeah, there's absolutely a little bit of drama, but it's total sisterhood. People really like, there is a great social element to it. So game day is usually Saturday, and then after the games, because there's a few games that night, everybody, you know, there's a coordination of, here's the bar that we're going to go to tonight. And I bartend as well, so usually I'm bartending after the games. So there was a night where the league came to my bar after we played, and it's maybe one of the most fun nights I've ever had at a gay bar.
Wow. Were you spending the whole night just serving drinks, or were you getting... before that question, have you ever hooked up with anybody from gay football?
No, I have not. I have not hooked up. Now, listen, I joined the league kind of midstream this year. I was on the waitlist for a while. Somebody else got injured, so I joined midstream. But I will say there are some very attractive men in the gay football league.
I love also the trail of injured gay men that are now having to drop out of gay flag football, and then you're off the wait list. It's kind of incredible. But listen, there's still time for you to get dicked down by a flag football fag, and I hope that if that's something you want, I hope it happens for you.
Mama, from your mouth to God's ears.
To whatever, Sam, there's some gay football guy's name Sam something. We love gay athletes. We love Jeremy Crittenden, who posts gorgeous content on the internet, but you're also, as you say, you are giving bartender realness, you are giving actor realness, comedian realness. You also have a show that is called Undateable, and I'm bringing this up because before we get into the second half of this interview where I ask my horniest, hard-hitting questions, this description for the show really struck me. Undateable is described as Jeremy Crittenden is a single gay 40-something back on the market after his second divorce. With all that baggage, he has one big question: is he even dateable? Jeremy, the rumors are true. You are post-second divorce. Do you feel powerful being a two-time gay divorcee?
I do feel like a trailblazer. I did wonder for a while if I was the most divorced gay in the United States. Like, probably not, but the odds were not terrible. I will say I have since met somebody who has been divorced three times. A gay person who has the divorce hat trick, which is really impressive.
Really impressive. What's the timeline for your divorces? When was divorce one? When was divorce two?
So divorce one was finalized in late 2016, just as I was starting a relationship with who would become husband number two.
Stop. And that's then, amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, a divorce sometimes takes a while. Like, it, you know, we had been separated for a long time, but and then divorce number two is fresh. It's very, very fresh. So we split up a few years ago. And then that divorce process, I think, is done. I think has wrapped up.
Crossies.
I'm not 100% sure.
Wow. To not know if you're divorced is really, again, it's almost like you're giving old character actress who is just counting the amount of men she has been married to. It's giving Elizabeth Taylor.
Thank you. Mm.
But I do, on a half serious note, I do think that it is sort of amazing to be that sort of trailblazer, because when gay marriage became legal, obviously what comes next is gay divorce. And I think that you even have a video about how straight divorce is what you said, like 42-ish%. Lesbians are like 70 something, which is surprising and wild. And then gay
men. They're moving in too quick. Lesbians, you know you're moving in too quick. We know you're moving in too quick. Love you, but.
Well, listen, and I love, you know, a girly who thinks she knows what she wants. And if she's wrong, then that's just the price we pay. But then
that's,
you said gay men are like pretty low when it comes to divorce rates.
Yeah, rate is like 28% or something that I read.
Which I think part of that, of course, is the idea that we as gay men sort of run away from certain heteronormative ideas. I think a lot of straight couples get divorced partly because of quote-unquote cheating, when, of course, gay men are more likely to be involved in open relationships, which can create more communication. And listen, I'm not here to have the open relationship discourse, because I am team OR and I am team do whatever the fuck makes you happy. But I guess I'm curious about, did you learn anything different from the first marriage versus the second? How do you look back on it now? Even, I guess, you're fresh off the second, but how do you look back on these divorces and your takeaways?
I would say, like, my first husband, whose name is also Jeremy, which, you know, we can unpack that at some point.
Mm.
Great, wonderful guy. But, you know, we met when we were in our early 20s. So I really look at that as like, we kind of grew up together. We were basically kids when we got together. And, you know, there was a lot of, we were monogamous and we were open and we were breaking up and getting back together. And like, it was a whole thing, but that was over, you know, 12, 13 years we were together.
Yeah.
So it was a really long relationship. But it's when I started to realize, like, a bad habit of mine in a relationship is that I'm very easily sort of sucked into somebody's orbit, you know? And, but I also have like really strong aspirations of my own.
Yeah.
And eventually at some point I've found in my relationships that I'm really good at like sort of like slicing off things about myself in order to be the partner that somebody else wants. And then eventually I realize, oh, I have no limbs here. You know, I don't really know what I'm doing. And
well,
then
you're
I
describing,
kind of freak out.
There's a word that has come up in my therapy that I think is very normal in a lot of relationships, which is what? Codependence. And I think that we have been modeled that codependence is healthy, actually. That it's like, when you lose yourself in your partner, when you're only with your partner, when you are only prioritizing your partner, that can be sort of mistranslated to a codependence, where you actually are losing parts of yourself and losing your ability to stand as an individual, knowing that you are also developing yourself as a singular person, and then of course your relationship gets stronger too. But I think codependence is like really very, very classic, and so many of us deal with it.
For sure. And, you know, I think out of marriage one, I really learned that's a really easy trap for me to fall into. And then coming out of marriage two, like if we're being totally honest with each other, coming out of marriage two, I learned that I had been fighting with depression for a really, really long time. And maybe it took the pandemic really unleash that. But when that marriage wrapped up, it was very, very hard. I had a full breakdown and really realized then, I was like, oh, this is depression has been something that I've been fighting with my entire life. And, you know, now I at least have a grip on that, which is great. But I would also say out of that, you know, that marriage ended just as I was turning 40, that I was like, okay, so I defined the first 40 years of my life by being in relationships, by being someone's son, by being someone's boyfriend, by being a husband, by being another husband. And I thought, okay, this is perfect. So if 40 is around the midway mark, because let's be honest, 40 is around the midway mark, guys, that I get this opportunity to define the next 40 years by doing the things that I want to do. And if I do end up in a relationship again, which God knows, that I want to define it as holding on to these things that I'm doing now that have made me happier than I've ever been.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Forcing myself to be that person in a relationship so that I'm in control of me.
Right. Well, I think the irony in that too is that the more you work on your own stuff and whether it's working on the tools to find what keeps you out of a depressive spiral or just what makes you really light up and feel authentically yourself, that will probably, if you end up wanting to be in a relationship, that will actually probably make your next relationship that much stronger because you've done the work as an individ, which we say, yeah. God bless. I do, though, of course, want to hear about the current dating of it all, the sex of it all. But before we go into the present, I want to go quickly into the past to hear about Jeremy as a young gay. First of all, are you a Canadian turned American? Canadian? What's your nationality situation?
I'm Canadian, so I grew up in Canada. I moved to America when I got married to my second husband. He's American.
I see.
So I'm technically an immigrant. I hold a green card. But citizenship, I think I'd do citizenship in like another year or so, but I do plan on getting that.
Wow. And so you go from what part of Canada were you in before moving to New York?
So I grew up near Calgary, Alberta, which is like the Texas of Canada.
Yeah.
And then I lived in Vancouver for a lot of years and then Toronto briefly before moving down here.
Okay. Shout out. Well, we love the Canadians. We love immigrants. They get the job done, et cetera, et cetera.
Get the job done, baby.
My question, though, going into your herstory is about the first boy-boy kiss. Can you tell me if you remember who and where you were?
Yes. Yes, of course I can. My first boy-boy kiss was I was 17 years old. I was in Edmonton, which is sort of like one of the bigger cities in the province I grew up in, I was doing the musical Fame, and there was, it was my first, and like, I didn't know, like, so the town I grew up in is Medicine Hat, Alberta. I was the only gay person that I knew, and I came out when I was 16. So I went and did this show, and the day that I got there and we started rehearsal, there was this beautiful boy who was a dancer, and he was just like, I was, the minute I met him, I was absolutely intoxicated.
Okay, give us the description.
His name is Kyle. We're still friends.
What did he look like? What was so intoxicating about his look?
I think we were about like the same height. He was like, you know, he's in dancer shape. And like...
How tall are you?
I'm like 5'9".
Okay, so 5'9", dancer, and you walk in and you say, that boy is mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't say that because I'd never been with a guy. I was like, oh my God, I wish that boy could be mine. I wish that boy could be mine, you know? And we hit it off, and I remember, oh yes, oh God, this is so sweet. Man, this takes me back. So we went to, a bunch of us in the show went to go and see another play one night. And we were sitting beside each other in the theater. And just, it was one of those things where like, all of a sudden you realize, oh, our knees are touching and nobody's moving their leg. And then all of a sudden they're like, our hands are kind of touching at the side of the chair and nobody's moving a hand. And then all of a sudden we're holding hands. Oh. And it was so sweet. It was so sweet. And I think that was the night we like saying goodbye. We had a little, you know, we had a little kiss. Did I spend the night at his place? I might've spent the night at his place. Yeah.
How fast we go from, it might have been a little kiss to, you were throating his cock. That is,
it was it was really cute and sweet. And oh my gosh, I haven't thought about that in years. Thank you for letting me like relive that.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for taking you us there. I have to say that it's rare we get to hear about young, sweet, innocent love in that way when it comes to gay love, because so much of it is like for me, mine was still somewhat sweet and young, but I waited till I was in college and I was like, I try to feel like I was an adult, but I was still very much a child. But yours sounds very much like, I don't know, it's so young and sweet and innocent. And
if I
may tell you a quick story that you actually brought me to surprised tears, but when you just said the musical Fame, which is very gay, because when I was around the same age of 17, 16 or 17, there were two like cabaret singing professionals that were New York girlies who came to St. Louis, Missouri, where I'm from, and they produced like a cabaret workshop, how to like, you know, nail a cabaret show song. And I was a really, you know, ambitious young musical theater teenager. And I said to my parents, I want to do this workshop. And it was only for adults, but for some reason they let me in. And the song that I sang was from Fame. And it was, to play a love scene. We don't need the violins to play love
scene. Absolutely.
And it's like, and so, and I, and the reason why I got teary is because I was so closeted, and all these, and there was a lot of gay guys, gay people in this workshop, of course. And they all knew that I was gay. I didn't really know. And they had me sing that song as if I was singing it to my best friend, because they knew they didn't want to give me like a romantic partner to sing to, because they knew what I was going through, even though I really didn't. And I'm singing song to my best friend in my mind. And I just think about that young boy that was like so deeply, deeply closeted and ashamed and surrounded by adults who knew more than he did.
Yeah.
And that musical Fame really, really took me back to that memory. So, wow, look at us. Look at us.
Oh, I love that. And you know what? Like, what a gift for you as a young man to like have those adults. And that's the thing that I think about for me growing up two things, growing up in a small town where I didn't know anybody who was gay, but also like we lost so many of the people in the generation that were ahead of us. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of these elders that we didn't get the opportunity to connect with. And
exactly.
So those elders that I have like in my life had an opportunity to connect with, even though it's been like much later in life. I just like, I treasure those men so much. And I'm so grateful that I've been able to learn from them. As a matter of fact, there was a man I met right around the time of my second divorce, that wonderful guy, his name is David, and he's not with us anymore, but the last time we visited together, and I knew he was dying, And that would be the thing you always say. Be like, hey, David, how are you? He's like, well, I'm dying, but I'm still here, you know?
Wow.
We had a really beautiful conversation. And I was saying to him, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm not going to date again. I'm good. Like, I've been married twice, you know, particularly my second marriage, I consider to be like a really great love. And like, I'm good. I don't need to go through this a third time. And, you know, he listened to me like, you know, really intently, and he just let me kind of go. And then he asked me, so what do you do when you feel lonely at night? And it wasn't something that I had really thought about.
Hmm.
And then he said, what do you do then when you want someone to hold you? And so these were things coming out of like this relationship and like starting into this next segment of my life that I was going to be like, oh, era for the rest of the days, you know, that really made me go like, God, what do I do in those situations? You know, I'm not a very lonely person. But there are times like, you know, I am at a point now where I go like, I do miss having a person in my life, but yeah. I'm fucking terrified of it, you know?
Well, I think it's really interesting that we can allow ourselves to go through these different phases. And sometimes the phases feel like they're forever. So like a hoe phase in our mind can be like, I just want to be a fucking slut until the day I die. And for some of us, maybe that is the case and we celebrate that. But the biggest lesson I have learned as a gay ass fucking adult is allowing ourselves to pivot and to change and to grow. And I love seeing you in a hoe phase, but you never know what comes after hoe. And it's exciting to be able to find that out. But speaking of, I think this is a perfect chance for us to get into some of the hoe questions. So I'm curious about if any hookups come to mind that were either super formative or sexy, exciting, shocking, surprising, just stand out in your mind in any way.
Okay, listen. This is a little toxic. I'm a big advocate for XX. I love XX. I think XX is the best sex. If any of my exes are watching or listening right now, anytime, boys, anytime. So, okay. I can't think of to tell this story. There was a time that a partner and I...
For the rest of this interview, head to Substack, linked in the description. You can also watch bonus episodes with Mikey Graceffa from Death Becomes Her, Isaiah Rutledge, Sunset Boulevard's G-Min Moon. We have Derek Cage, Patrick, Nick, Thanos, Mark. They're all hot. The stories are amazing. And you should go check it out at substack.com/@Eric Wills, linked in the description. I love you. Bye.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.